for a reason. One of the reasons being that this particular approach to the Bible gets a little strong. And if you're deeply rooted in the church, you may resent it, because I'm going to get stronger. And it has to be explained very carefully. What amazes me is that the public who really is aware of a certain element of truth, tolerates things that are not acceptable if they stop and think. But they don't think, and these things that are not acceptable go right past them and are assimilated into everyday living. I've been rather strong about wanting to divest ourselves of certain obligations which we have inherited. I've been wanting to get rid of certain elements of the thought that follows when you read certain facts in the Bible that are facts, and people are used to thinking of it in a different way. So you're always going against the grain. But do you know, the way I go against the grain makes me embarrassed, because I don't do it strong enough. I feel that the Bible is so contrary to what everybody thinks about it that in order to do it well, you'd have to be a revolutionary. For instance, were you aware of the fact that everything that has been said by me in a milder way has been said stronger in the Bible? I mean everything. Not one word that I have said isn't in the Bible in a stronger way. Everything that we are doing is trying to catch up and alert people that the Bible is fooling them. They are reading it one way, and the church is letting them read it one way, because they want to fool the public. But when you read it the way it should be read, you can see that this is a very serious matter, because there are many millions of people who live by the Bible. And when you have the wrong truth, when you have the untruth, and you live by the untruth, thinking you're living by the truth, the world goes astray. I would like to read to you something in the Bible that may amaze you, because you've read it and you haven't thought about it that way. But when you think about it this way, you'll agree I should have been thinking about it this way. And if you were a very serious church member, you'd hide your head in shame. We'll start with chapter 18 of Revelation. John wrote a gospel, and it didn't get anybody mad. It was a nice, genteel gospel. He said things, though, that were a little strong, perhaps. Didn't get anybody mad. It was taken right into the Bible as one of the gospels. John wrote something else. In the Bible, he says it one way. In the Revelation, it's a completely different story about the same thing. The identical subject matter, but a completely different story. And this one is concealed. This is said that Jesus Christ spoke the Revelation, and he translated it, heard it, translated it. That's true. When Jesus Christ had passed from this earth, he felt an obligation to say to the world, whoa, listen, There's nothing that you're doing that is fitting what the truth is. So I'm going to tell it to you, and I'm going to put it in figurative language, in the type of language that won't make immediate progress with you. You'll all say one thing and all say another. And it's really esoteric language. It's kind of language that makes you think and decide what is being said. But what I'm saying, down to earth, is that you have been led by a lie. You have been led by a blasphemy about God. And I've got to get this into the Bible, past the churches who have led you by this lie. Now that's quite a feat. So he tells you a different story than you're listening to. But I'm sure you'll see as I read it to you what it means. I've said so far that the world was not made by God. You don't find that statement directly in the Bible, but you know it's true. John and Jesus say something about it which you never dreamed of, which you never dreamed they said. You find it at the beginning of chapter 18. It just makes you wince when you think that they have told us the truth 2,000 years ago. Couldn't get it. This is chapter 18. It's called The Fall of Babylon. What is Babylon? What do you think Babylon is? This world. Babylon is this world. Why is it falling? He'll tell you. This was said 2,000 years ago, and we are saying it just now. Do you see how truth is delayed? And after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power. And the earth was lighted, lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon, the great, is fallen. That's 2,000 years ahead of our realization that this world is not. You hear it one day in a classroom like this, there's no world out there. And here it is 2,000 years ago. 2,000 years ago! Why did you get it just now? Babylon has fallen. And we are finding that our Babylon, our world, is Babylon, and is going to fall, just as it says here. Babylon the Great is fallen, has become the habitat of devils. That our present civilization is being described. Babylon has become the habitat of devils. Of every unclean and hateful bird. We're being told something we wouldn't like to hear in plain language by someone who said it years ago, and we can palm it off as just something we heard. It was in a book said about the society of Babylon, which to us was a couple thousand years ago. But this is written by Jesus, who is writing it as of the future. He's not writing about it there. He's writing about the world that is coming. And he sees the world that is coming with his inner vision. And he calls it Babylon. He could have said, the world in 1993 is fallen. It will become the habitation of devils and a very unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have drunk of the wrath of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. And the merchants of the earth are waxed rich from the abundance of her delicacies. What's different about our society? He's describing it as closely as he can. It's the society he sees. The society that this class has told you has to go. And when this class tells you that every mortal is on a time bomb, every mortal will disappear from the earth, he's telling you that here. But that's 2,000 years ago. About today. About every today. It was true 200 years ago. It will be true 2,200 years from now, until we make the change. Until we get out of this consciousness into spiritual consciousness. I don't know if I'm trying to justify myself or not, but it says that. I'm trying to interpret it to what it's saying, being said. And what I see is he is describing our civilization today. That's Jesus describing it. The Christ is telling you that we've got to get out of this civilization because it's uncivilized. I don't have any axe to grind about its goodness or badness. But we are discussing this as friends, and you must tell friends the truth. This civilization cannot last. We know it. Now, where will you be 200 years from now? It won't last. You cannot go beyond your lifetime. So everyone who's present today, 60 years, you're all somewhere else. It might be very forbidding to know this. It might so be very elucidating to know this. You can say to yourself, well, what can I do about it? Am I going to take this lying down? Whether I like it or not, in 60 years, I won't be here. I hadn't thought of that. Not only I won't, nobody will. There'll be a whole new crop of innocent, starry-eyed people, not knowing that they have a time limit. And if you listen carefully to the words used in the Bible now, we'll find that each little section somehow gets that across, and we let it go. We let it go because we don't know what to do about it. If we knew what to do about it, we might stop and say, Now, is he trying to tell me something in that Bible? We don't know what to do about it. It's going to happen anyway. We might as well just let the words go. It's as if we have no capacity to do something about what will happen. I don't control time. I don't control the stars. I don't control life and death. That's our attitude. All right, let me read this. There's something to be gleaned from it if your perceptions are keen, if you're aware that this man is telling something to the world after he had been crucified and shown that he is not crucified. He issues the revelation saying, see, I was not crucified, and I want to tell you about this world that I was in. What a world. Everybody dies. It's talked about life everlasting, but everybody dies. Don't you see you're in an imitation world? A total imitation. And the Bible wants to get this to you, but you have to be alert to catch it. Then you have something you can do about it. You develop your spiritual consciousness, which is life. You get out of the material consciousness, which is death. It's a lot of effort. But the only way to live is to have that eye active. And that's why I'm reading this to you. It seems like, where do you come off telling us all these things? I'm not telling you anything. I'm reporting. It's all here, every word of it. And I'm reporting what it says, and it says that if we stand and watch the world go by, it will bury us, whether we win a war or lose a war, whether we beat cancer or don't beat cancer, whether our child grows up or whether our child dies at birth. We're living in an imitation universe which is not the universe of the Father. There is no one in this universe at the present moment, maybe one or two or six, but no one who's going to come out of it alive. And very shortly, within 80 or 90 years, don't you see that it is an imitation and we're to know it? And Spirit wants us to know it. Spirit has got the message to us in spite of those who in the 16th and 17th century were telling astronomy, what do you come off with, those little instruments? What do they got to do with anything? You can't deny the Bible with those instruments. They weren't denying the Bible. They were telling the truth. The Bible, as it was written, was denying them. But religion was upholding the past for its own self-interest. You see that? Its own self-interest. They were keeping alive with the donations of the world. They couldn't hear anything that didn't support that interest. So if you were strong enough to get up a message that people would listen to, which wasn't what the church message was, you were taking your life in your hands. Off you go. We can't have that. And we got enough people here to guarantee we can't have that. As a result, all these beautiful words were buried for years. Now, this point is very important. John wrote the book of revelation in conjunction with Jesus. He also wrote the Gospel. And if you examine them, they're two different books completely. In the Gospel, he uses such nice language, sweet language, good language, uplifting language. And here he calls a spade a spade. It's two men who are different people writing these two Gospels. One writing the Gospel and one writing Revelation. But they were both John. And this one, in Revelation, you see the facts of life, and they are hidden under a glass. You've got to lift it up and look in. And Jesus, of course, in his life, anticipating just what did happen, said that we were looking out at the world through a glass darkly. That glass darkly was what we are still looking through today. We're willing to overlook the bad spots, just look at the nice spots. I'm glad, though, there are some people who are determined to turn it around. A man asked me the other day what the cosmic mind was. I'm going to tell him. The cosmic mind isn't divine. Divine mind is not meant by the cosmic mind. You may not know it, but in the cosmic mind, you're worshiping the group thought. The group thought of mortality. The mortal thought about reality. Grouped together from all the brilliant mortal minds that exist. It's called cosmic thought. I call cosmic thought the world or universal mind. So while it travels under a very auspicious name, all it is that which tells us about the world and about what's in the world hidden from view. Let ourselves be hypnotized by important phrases so that we think when we are working for the world mind, the cosmic mind, that we are doing something wonderful. We're being trapped. The cosmic mind is the voice of that which is not God. The cosmic mind is what puts an arm in your shoulder. It's what makes you walk. It's what blows the east wind and the west wind. It does these vast projects. more you learn of truth, the more you learn that what's not true in one small area is not true about the big area. You're worshiping something that is not godly. It's easy to be fooled by words. I want to finish reading this in Revelation chapter 18, talking about the "For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication." And the merchants at the earth of the earth are waxed rich, although the abundance of her delicacies. And I heard a round voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, come out of her." That's the world we live in. Come out of her. This is the Christ voice. That you be not deceived by her plagues. All of the warnings are here, but we don't recognize it and bring it up to where we are. That's about another day to most people. Christ doesn't speak about another day. Christ is speaking, and Christ speaks what he wants at the time it's spoken. Christ is alive. Every word Christ spoke is still true, just as was when he spoke it. Another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people." "That ye be not partakers of her sins." "And that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities." It's rather vague talk to tell you that there's something wrong on the earth, and what's wrong on the earth is all these things that is an imitation of God's creation. Everywhere you go in the chapters in Revelation, it tells you more and more and more and more about the world you're living in. I think there was another. "And after these things, I heard a great hallelujah. Salvation and glory and honor and power unto the Lord our God. For the true and righteous are his judgments. Now he's discussing the difference between what the world thinks and what the truth is. For he hath judged the great whore, which did corrupt the earth. And when was that corruption? When was that corruption? If there's not a mortal alive, if there's not a mortal thought that's true, when was the great corruption? On the earth. Now he's saying something else. And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit. Has there to be a new heaven and a new earth? Can you change heaven? How do you do it? The new heaven is heaven as it always has been. The heaven he thought was the old heaven is heaven as it was described by man. When we go through this revelation with a fine cone and rout out the negatives, the untruths, we have a couple of chapters only. There's nothing here but what's wrong. Open your eyes. He's saying that the world is blind. And we are catching up to what he was saying. Is blind. What is in a vision? A way of getting out of that blindness. A way of looking at the invisible and discovering what is, instead of looking at the visible and discovering what is not. Look at the world and see what's behind the world, how the world got there. What can the world offer in the way of truth? The answer is very little. You might say nothing, and it would be true. The world offers the opinions of men. When you look at the world, it is very difficult to decide how we could have been deceived by its presence. The sun comes up in the morning and we get up with it. Goes down. We go to bed later, after the sun. What makes that sun come up and down? Is that sun in heaven? It's not even there. What makes the wind blow? What makes the ocean turbulent? Not God. God didn't create waves. God didn't create water to drown people. We look at the world and we see that all of it is our supposition about something else that we cannot see. We assume. With our 2020 vision, we assume all that we think we know. And then our 2020 vision tells us that our son is dead. Our 2020 vision tells us many things, and we do not stop to think this is a supposition. The truth is not what we are seeing. No one has ever seen, not one person alive, has ever seen heaven. And everybody thinks they're going there. I don't know what it looks like. It's just out of sight. Somewhere out of sight. You see what religion gets away with? What a momentous thing to have the world in a state of fear and anxiety. Sometimes in a state of peace, but that's only a temporary peace. Can you believe that this is intentional? That this is something that religion itself turns away from and as if I'm not part of that, but I am part of it. I want you to come and be a member of our congregation. And then why? Can you tell me the truth? What do you mean? What's the truth? Well, Jesus is telling me the truth. John is telling me the truth. And it's not the same thing that I hear. I hear a version of the truth. Meanwhile, my family is a little older, a little grayer, a little closer to a certain point that they would not like to be. And I've got to pay on these plots of ground, and then the church is going to help me pray for that. What's that going to do? You still have the plots of ground. Then you dump somebody in them. It's really, an acceptance of something we'd rather forget. Just accept it and pretend that it's that way. But it isn't that way. It's a make-believe world. The glory and the wonder, the magnificence and the eternality are all completely passed over with excuses. Suppositions, pretense. So when we take this world and look at it something that we're going to walk through, something we're going to discard like a cloak, that we may live in the reality of the universe created by God, that we may become eligible to live in our kingdom. It's an entirely different story than people are living daily. Now, you may be an infinite way student and close to the truth, but it would help if the whole world were turned into an awareness of the truth, because you would not have to walk as an outsider. You would not have to be so still. You would not have to fear what isn't there. Let's take a case of an infant who grows up, one in the world and one in an awareness of the truth. What happens at age 15? The one who is living on what dreams are made of is happy, contented, going well. The other is learning something that is not known to his fellow man. And later on in life, at the age of 30, the dreamer, still dreaming, the man of 30 now, has found something that is tangible for him. He's found the whole law that one man lives by doesn't work for him. He's found that the law is divine. He's found that everything he wants to do is dictated by an inner power. And when he follows it, it may not be known to others, but he's living on a different path. He's called what he calls a truth student. But he's not living on the truth as it stands, but on the spirit of it. Now, let's say that he's more in the flow of God than the one who's living on the letter of the law. And when he reaches 40 and 50 and has children of his own and is able to deepen, verify certain things, he doesn't find that life has become shorter than it was. He's only got 20 or 30 years to go. Oh no, he's 50. But he doesn't have 20 or 30 years to go. He's beginning to see the eternal nature of the truth that he's studying. He already has passed the point of accepting the mortal picture. He's not under the spell of the mortal mind. He's not under the spell of things which are considered absolute, positive. This person is living in the mind of God, and that mind is in himself. is able to take all that comes to him, sift it out easily, and to know what must be done. Each thing he does then is now become a divine activity. The other fellow, not aware of that. He's working by the laws of chance. You see then, as we divide the world into two camps, the ones who are living by the word of God and the ones who are living by the authority of the human mind are divided. One is going to pass away, and one is going to be led into the divine kingdom. Now, we here today are those who are being led into the divine kingdom. I don't think I have to say it. I think we know it. When we read the Bible and the errors and the beliefs just stick right out so we can almost pull them as off a tree. That's not for us. We're not about to fool ourselves. We want the truth because the truth is what God put here for us to live by.